Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Summer Shorts, a subsidiary of Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. Because it's hot, we're doing shorter episodes. That means more time for you at the beach or at the library or wherever you like to go to cool off during the summer, which is the hottest ever on record and probably will be for the rest of our lives. I'm John McDonald, here definitely not to bum you out, and I'm here again with my fabulous, lovable co-star, co-host, co-all things, Magnus. Hello, Magnus.
Hello. Currently, we're not sweltering over here, but we are sheltering because it has been absolutely crazy with a lot of thunder, a lot of lightning, and people getting caught by torrential rain. So we may not be sweltering, but we're certainly drenched.
I'm just glad that we don't have a wet bulb happening where I am, because a wet bulb means that it's so hot and humid, you can't even go into the shade to escape the heat. And it's very bad. Speaking of things that have tried to escape heat and not failed, we're going to talk about a movie starring Fran Drescher. I'm just going to read you a couple of reviews to give you an idea of the tone that this movie set. By the way, this movie currently has a score of 18% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 22 reviews. Roger Ebert praised Drescher's performance, but said audiences would not empathize with her character since we never feel she's really uncertain, insecure, or vulnerable. Not sure why that's a bad thing, because if a man were playing that character, people would probably love him for being stoic. Carrie Rickey for the Philadelphia Inquirer described this movie as the tasty cake of snack movies and quote-unquote shameless and intermittently funny, which I like to think would also be on my Grindr bio. We are talking about Fran Drescher and Timothy Dalton in Beautician and the Beast. So I discovered in reading about this movie that even though it sounds like it's a takeoff of Beauty and the Beast, it is not, in fact, a takeoff of Beauty and the Beast.
What is it, particularly a takeoff of something else then?
Yes, it's a takeoff of a close spiritual cousin of Beauty and the Beast. Actually, two. One explicit, one implicit. I know that when we talk about this originally, it was clearly a Beauty and the Beast thing. But in some interviews, both the writer, director, and Fran Drescher have said it's not that, and it's something else. But they're very close. They're all very close, which is why you'd be excused for believing.
Is one The King and I?
One of them is The King and I, which one of the other reviews that I have not read lambasted them for not being Deborah Kerr and Yul Brynner. But having seen pictures of young Yul Brynner, no one's going to be Yul Brynner. There is no actor alive as unearthly attractive as young Yul Brynner, I have to be honest. So The King and I is one of the ones that get dinged for. It also gets dinged for being a low-rent version of Sound of Music, but expressly it was written to be King and I. It was also expressly written for Fran Drescher to play a Fran Fine type character because she didn't want her fan base to have to see her in a different light. It was a calculated move on her part to remain friendly toward her audience base from The Nanny. Mm-hmm. Because when this movie came out, she was still filming the last couple of seasons, and she's a really smart businesswoman, and she didn't know if people would accept her as a traditionally romantic actress, so she played into the person that she had been on TV for 4 years previous. It didn't work as well, but honestly, I don't think this movie is an 18% on Rotten Tomatoes movie. I've seen much worse. Find this movie to be incredibly queer, incredibly funny, a little bit reverent, and shockingly appropriate even to modern times, for having been written in 97 and compared negatively to Fools Rush In. The director has a whole bunch of romantic and found family and sitcom credits to his writer to his credit. So the director was really comfortable in the genre and continues to work to this day. And Fran Drescher does too, and so does Timothy Dalton. So I argue to say this movie was not a dumpster fire, as much people would want you to be believed. And also, I mean, the disc for it is like the pinkest pink you've ever seen. It's like Anish Kapoor could not own the disc for Beautician and the Beast. Yeah, and of course the fashion is on point because Fran Drescher never does anything without knowing what she's doing fashion-wise. I think this movie is a great celebration of that fish out of water romantic comedy. I don't think it deserves to be hated on. I certainly don't think Roger Ebert's ding at a woman being self-actualized and not insecure or insincere, so we'll never empathize with her. I definitely think that is absurd because a male character, again, like that would be loved. And I like that too because Timothy Dalton, as this kind of Eastern European, angry, brooding, very wounded, grieving man, leader of a country where machismo is a thing. He is very wounded and very hurt. And she's able to pull that out of him and show him kindness. This is a movie at the end of the day about the idea of what showing kindness gives you. And also, it's about trade unions. And because I'm pro-union, I do love a good pro-trade union movie because there's a whole subplot about it where one thing she does is
Yes.
she brings unionization into this country that desperately needs it. Also, the bit about this fake country in Eastern Europe winning the, I think it's the Gulf War that they were never even a part of and sent nobody to as a little side plot in like the fake classroom they've got is amazing. And I absolutely love that. It's so 90s, but it could still work today in the context of a different country. Also, Fran Drescher's breasts are amazing. When they dress her in a proper cup size to show cleavage, hello, come on. Fran Drescher's breasts are amazing. And I say that as a gay man. Love me some Fran Drescher cleavage, especially in this like finale dance dress that she does. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Oh, right. So, Beautician and Beast. A lot of thoughts on it. So, I'll start off by saying I agree with you. I don't think it's an awful film. It's got a lot of, first time I watch it, there's some great comical moments. You really do feel for Fran, or I forget what her name is in this film. What was her name in the film?
Joy, Miss Miller, as Iris says. So her name is Joy Miller is the name of Fran Drescher's character in the film.
You do really feel for Miss Miller as she's bringing a, she's seeing what she can make of the situation. She doesn't know what's going to end up happening, but you can really feel that she's trying her best to stand up for herself and what's really kind of like the antithesis of everything that she's ever experienced as a free-spirited American woman. So there's some great things, and as you say, culture clash is the big thing about this movie. But then finding that middle ground and that ability to overlook your old like ways and prejudices and find the good in a different way of thinking as well, Joy, should I say, is able to bring out of Mr. Dictator Man.
This movie was written with Fran Drescher's voice in mind, too. It was specifically written for dialogue and movement that would suit her. So when you call her Fran, like you're tripping up not saying Fran Fine, it was written for a Fran Fine type. It was written for her to play this role in this manner. So it's okay that you trip up. It's that was intent. Right there. That was definitely, Fran Fine goes to Eastern Europe and finds love, kind of thing.
That's true. I mean, one could almost look at this movie as sort of an alternative universe where Fran Fine is actually called Joy Miller, and this is how her life plays out in this different version of events. But I feel that the choice to make it clear, like what they did with bringing Fran Drescher on board and like so closely mirroring the characters, I see the advantage, but then I see the disadvantage Because the fact that I'd already watched everything about The Nanny beforehand, I went into this film and at times I really couldn't get out of my head that I was watching Miss. I was half expecting the shout, the scream of Miss Fine to come like down the hallway.
So here's the catch 22 of things in the 90s. Because we celebrate stuff we love from the 90s. Because for us, it's nostalgia. Like, if I had been born in the 60s, I'd probably be nostalgic more for Mary Tyler Moore, et cetera, et cetera. Because Mary Tyler Moore had the same problem with Mary Richards and with her Lori Petrie from Dick Van Dyke. The 90s were heavily about typecasting. And writing Fran Drescher's Fran Fine character as this romantic is both making sure it's familiar for audiences, but it also is kind of the security blanket because you kind of need this to be some sort of blockbuster. So the flip side of the 90s is that people kind of expect certain things from actors. They want George Clooney to be a heartthrob. They want Adam Sandler to be a goofy man child that might get redeemed in the end or might not. So one of the joys of Beautician and the Beast is that it's Fran Drescher. One of the dings is that it's Fran Drescher as Fran Fine. And it's kind of that's kind of the coin, the other side of the coin of the 90s. It was the thing that Daria always railed against when Jane was talking about art. It's one of those things where kind of had to happen that way. Because I kind of agree with Fran Drescher's assessment of would the audience, knowing me as Fran Fine, accept me as a purely romantic character? If she had come on and been Deborah Kerr without the Jewish affectation, if she hadn't been snappy and sassy, if we hadn't had amazing things like, you come back without a tan? I went to Eastern Europe. You know, if we hadn't got lines like that that are snappy and witty. And then I can see how the movie falls on its face if Fran Drescher tries to play Audrey Hepburn. Like that's part of the downside of the 90s. You might say that the upside was you get the nanny. The downside is the beautician and the beast has to suffer because the nanny succeeds so well, I guess in my mind.
Yeah, because if I recall, this unfortunately didn't end up doing quite well. I think maybe it struggled to find an audience beyond the nanny fan base.
It did. It did, but that's also kind of the gift is Fran Drescher is really good at playing who she plays. The burden is that she's really good. So like the character she did on Happily Divorced, where she plays herself, she still has a bit of that Fran Drescher nasal infection. She looks like who she is. She looks like she's from Flushing, Queens. You can't
Oh, yeah.
kind of change that. But there's some really great stuff in this film. Her relationship with Ian McNeice as Ira, the guy that finds her and thinks she's a science teacher instead of a cosmetologist and hires her, the way that she kind of guides him and gets him to a place where eventually he creates a better country because he stands up to the evil prime minister. The relationship she has with the son Carl, who tries to seduce her. Because he thinks that what men do, and she's like, "Honey, what are you doing? You're not my type." And he's like, "But I am man, and I am going to be king." And she's like, "What do you really want?" And he's eventually is like, "I want to be an artist." There's even the unintentional Julie Andrews parody, where she, or maybe intentional, where she makes clothes out of the Ralph Lauren bedsheets for the kids to play in, and Timothy Dalton hates that. The great conversation that I think would be useful for anyone likes. Anyone that likes writing should study the conversation in the kitchen where she and Timothy Dalton's Boris Pachinko talk about mustard on sandwiches after hours, where it's this wonderful romantic moment where neither of them can leave the room until they've gotten their point across, and it's about power. The conversation she has with the eldest daughter about sex, it's really about ice cream and romance. It's a wonderful scene. The problem is Fran Drescher playing that straight. I don't think those come across because even when I think of Fran Drescher, I can't escape the shadow of Fran Fine. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but There's also kind of people dinging this movie because she's a self-actualized strong female character that really does not jibe with me. And I feel that as a queer person, that people unfairly maligned this movie in 97 because she was so certain and so capable and said, okay, you think I'm a teacher? I'll be a teacher, you know, kind of thing.
No, I agree with that. I wonder whether it was some people as well, like, oh, I can't believe this strong-willed American woman is standing up to these, like, fascist dictators, etc.
There's always going to be certain types of people that they believe go to certain types of movies, and people either subvert that expectation and everybody loves something, like with the animated Spider-Man movies that we're seeing now, or everybody absolutely hate something and nobody goes to it, like with my experience with X-Men Apocalypse, even though I really liked it. It's one of those things where the people doing reviews are kind of invested in the idea of I'm going to be right. And also, Fran Drescher being a strong woman in Hollywood seems almost easy to try to knock her down a peg. And so having this righteous indignation about this, maybe not the most world-changing, maybe a little cotton candy kind of romantic rom-com film. But in the 90s, there were a lot of those. I mean, My Best Friend's Wedding, which is one of my favorite summer films, with Julie Roberts. You could almost talk about that as kind of this cotton candy female affair. Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and He's Just Not That Into You, which we're both going to get from Ken Kwapis as well. I think people are unfair to this movie until they see it now in context. Yeah. Because I think it's one of those things where you see 18% on Rotten Tomatoes and you're like, why would I watch that movie? I can just watch The Nanny. But this is a movie about, you know, because they don't fall in love in the same way that they fall in love in The King and I or The Sound of Music. There's no real outward declaration of romance. There's fighting and there's dancing and there's obviously a physical attraction that's never consummated. But he comes in at the end of the movie, you know, and doesn't rescue her, but he comes in and he offers something new and that he's changed her toward. And I think there's a message in this film that is really nice about being yourself eventually will get this kind of, not reward, but it can change other people into better versions of themselves if you're your authentic self, you know?
And you definitely did see that with Joy's influence on Boris. And, like, I think a great moment that encapsulates that, a plot thread, is the fact that the eldest daughter is dating someone that's heavily involved in the revolution. Is that what they called it?
It's a revolution. It's never clear what the revolution is for. They just want more freedom. But it's kind of like, what do you mean when you say freedom? Freedom to do what? But it's definitely, I love that. Yeah.
I think the thing is that if Boris had followed his natural instincts, he would have stamp out the insurrection, throw the boyfriend in jail. Eventually, his daughter's resentment towards him grows so strong, it just causes more issues in the family and even gets her standing against him. But no, you had Joy come in, and she was able to influence things for the better. And so these terrible events didn't come to pass because that Joy was able to sort of bring it out to a better conclusion, as it were.
Yeah. And I also like a movie in which it's not just pro-union, but she's also not afraid of the revolution, which is something that separates Joy Miller from Fran Fine. She's a little freaked out when people like throwing eggs at the limo, but like in the club and in setting up the meeting with someone to the eldest daughter of the king, setting up the meeting with the boyfriend in jail, like there's clearly a delineation between the two characters because there's a strength and joy that I can't imagine Fran Fine having. She's very honest and open. And I think one thing that helps the tone of this film is that Cliff Eidelman, who did the music, who did a lot of music from 88 to 2018. Cliff Eidelman's soundtrack is beautiful for this. Jason and Kenny from AllMusic really did say it when he said there's, you know, sweetness and sentimentality that capsized so many comedic scores. But there's something old-fashioned and romantic without being like falling down bad about this, about this movie. So like it's an appropriate score that doesn't tank the movie. And, you know, it really does. There's kind of this on the nose moment when she's talking about pro trade unions and they start playing like the theme from communism. But I think that works in the movie and for what this movie is. I think when you think about the idea of a genre romantic comedy fish out of water tale, Beautician and the Beast is almost giving you beat by beat, note for note, what you actually want out of that. And it has an appropriate amount of those major beats, which is physical action, and minor beats, which is comedy and dialogue that moves the plot along. And like I said, I don't think it's fair that it has an 18%. And it feels like if I looked at those reviews, 20 out of the 22 are going to be from men going, oh my God, she's so whiny. Why is she so whiny? Or why is she so self-actualized? Why doesn't Timothy Dalton stand up to her? And honestly, I like it as a gender switch in which he is pretending to be so sure, but is clearly not, and is clearly taken on this mantle all his life and is struggling with, he's heard yes men all his life. And this is the first time someone's been like, no. And so he's intrigued and he's turned on and he kind of does want to change. Like, he's not so obstinate about it. It really does, you know, it isn't a star term for Timothy Dalton, but he was already a star by the time he made Beautician and the Beast. You know, he'd already been James Bond at this point, which is kind of the pinnacle in some ways for like male characterdom in some ways. And I think there's something great in the gender subversion of this movie in having such a strong-willed woman who still carries off pink and femininity, and having the dad and the eldest son, actually, they do have this artistic, this softness, this warmth to them, and they're playing a character that really only she can subvert in a way. And the great scene where he's like, and everyone cheers for me on the balcony, and then she goes out to the balcony and raises her hands like him and everybody cheers again. That takes a strong actress to be able to achieve that with absolutely no irony. There's a way that Fran Drescher kind of winks to the camera, and you know you're watching a movie. This is something you can get lost in, but you know you're actually watching something. And I think that's something to be honored. This movie is great for gender subversion. If you're looking for like a romantic flick night, you could do Beautician and the Beast with First Wives Club, or like Sleepover or Mean Girls. Like, I think Beautician and the Beast is part of that subversive trope that I think works really well.
Oh, yeah. I would think that there's quite a few good gender power flicks from that era, and some of the ones from after it that match up really well. We saw Princess Diaries 2 only a couple of nights ago again, and that was less than a decade done after this one, and so there was a great thing of like continuing strong subversive female role models coming like even after the fact, and I think that would also couple well with this movie too. You're completely right. It doesn't get the attention it deserves. It's a bit of a forgotten gem.
I think it is forgotten. I think there's maybe we'll be part of the vanguard that brings it back, and Fran Drescher will be like, oh, I love them so much, I'm going to invite them to my castle or wherever she lives now. call me Fran. I have thoughts. I want to work with you. It'd be a great way to start my career. I have to say, this poster too, I You can take posters for movies all you want it for granted, but using kind of the Beauty and the Beast font with that effortless little swoop on the T into the A in Beast, when you've got Fran Drescher out in front with Timothy Dalton behind being all sour, and she's doing the whole thing where it looks like she's holding shopping bags, Confessions of a Shopaholic, there's something very pop about what Fran Drescher does. There's something very not quite 1960s, definitely 1990s about it, where it feels very referential, but it feels very fresh. I think Beautician and the Beast, as a double feature, like in prep for the Barbie movie, I don't know that I don't know if that would necessarily be bad. Because Barbie is going to be a fish out of water story from all I can tell. I'm very hyped for Barbie, of course, because I'm gay. But there's something very Fran Drescher about Barbie and something very Barbie about Fran Drescher, both as Joy and Fran. So, yeah.
Ooh, that almost feels like an academic essay in itself that's worth writing.
Wouldn't be the first time. I wrote a whole academic essay for Little Shop of Horrors, so it wouldn't be the first time. Actually, this movie would work really well for a version of Troop Beverly Hills where she doesn't go back to the ex-husband in the end. Like, I could do a Troop Beverly Hills with the Beautician and the Beast, but it has to be kind of Troop Beverly Hills where she doesn't go back to the guy from Coach, who is now like a super Republican. Yeah. But you could pair this well with a movie about a woman that either is or learns to become self-actualized. And I think that's probably where part of the hate comes from. Because otherwise, there's not really a reason to hate it. It's not world-changing, but not all good movies need to be world-changing. They need to be something that you want to see. Like, I love Moulin Rouge, but sometimes the way that it gets edited by Baz Luhrmann is really hard to handle. I love the Red Curtain trilogy, but like, Baz, you can hit on the cut button a little bit, you know? Beautician and the Beast does feel like an old school movie in a new school skin. And I don't think that's bad. I think that it's okay to have something in familiar territory. It doesn't all have to be 2001 A Space Odyssey where it's completely changing a genre. It's okay for it to not be. It's just, if you enjoy it, enjoy it and know you're not alone. Because I enjoyed it and I would like to think Magnus enjoyed it.
Oh, but I did very much so. As I say, there was a couple of bits to it, which we touched upon, that the sheer Fran fineness at times, but then at the same time, I look at it as a great individual piece, and you were right that there's significant differences between the characters. Joy is a very steely woman in sort of willpower, because she's thrown into this incredibly hostile environment, but she doesn't back down. She, puts her foot down and she soldiers on through it, through all of the challenges, and even like the great big finale at the end, where she's sort of confronted with this very, like, torturous choice by the slimy prime minister. At the same time, he clearly sees her as like an enemy to be vanquished, but an one that's equally deserving of being confronted, as it were. And
And
she
that's
does
not,
not
yeah.
back down the face of it.
And that's not the end of the movie. I mean, the end of the movie happens a little later when she quits and she goes home. And we have a whole scene where she's at home and she's distraught and there's a party and she leaves the party and comes back. That's the romantic element of it, come full circle. I really love that the idea of he went to her in the end, which is another subversion of a trope. She didn't give in and then stick around and become miserable for him and become a puppet. You know, it's really nice.
With Boris, and to a lesser extent his son, the main lesson that they learned from her influence was the allowing themselves to be a little vulnerable, to be a little sensitive, to still be men, but that they could admit they had a bit of vulnerability and at times weakness and such.
I also love that it's not a propaganda piece for an American way of thinking. Yes, Joy Luther happens to be very American, and it's very apparent she's very out of place. But this is not like a movie that's pro-capitalist jingoism, join America and doing the thing, come to the UN. I mean, there are elements of that, but it is more about Joy bringing her own personal brand of softness and belief in the capacity of people to this country, which is why she doesn't bring an American flag, but she teaches them about the trade union because her family is blue collar, and that trade union and the ability to have dignity and stand up for yourself is an important
thing.
Elections are good. Although, to be frank, we never really find out if it's like a real election or like if he's the only one on the ballot. So there might be more work to do than that. But it is a step in the right direction. And honestly, under Joy's tutelage, I could see people reelecting him, knowing that she's there to guide them to something better. It's Beautician and the Beast. They hated it then. They seem to hate it now. But we love it, and that's what matters.
Indeed. Very much so. And that's why it's probably one of those great things that you just share word of mouth, like we're kind of doing now, to be honest.
It's one of those things where it's easy enough to find the DVD in a Goodwill now, which is nice. So you can kind of stumble upon it. And that's what I kind of love about what we do here at Everything is Gave and the Straight Stuff. The idea of stuff that we can remind you of that you can stumble upon. That's always the hope and the goal.
Yes. Speaking of which, actually, I'd like to touch upon another Drescher production quickly, which is sort of linked to what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You mentioned before about the shadow of Fran Vine being over the film. And I think that's quite true to it. I would argue of her works after the fact, the work that I would argue that she kind of escapes from that and is able to play a different character, and probably only because a number of years have passed since then. She did a sitcom in the early 2010s called Happily Divorced.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, if there's one sitcom beyond The Nanny that I recommend for, it's Happily Divorced. I found it, me and my partner just found it an absolute blast while watching it. And we were kind of upset that they never made any more seasons of it, to be honest.
Well, Happily Divorced is really the story of Fran Drescher's life, because it's about her marriage to her first husband, who came out and then they divorced, but they remained friends afterwards. The thing about Fran Drescher is, outside of the TV and the joy she spread, not only was she a working producer, but she also had breast cancer. And so she went away for a while to recoup. And when she came back, this is her third run as a SAG-AFTRA president. I think it's something having to do with, again, I don't want to pull the sexism card, but I do think it's something about her being self-actualized that people kind of have a little bit of trouble with. And I could be wrong about that. I could be reading it wrong, but like, she has done some amazing work as a producer. Like, The Nanny as a TV show doesn't work just because she's the star of it. She was also part of the creative team behind it. I'd love to see Princesses, the show that she did with Twiggy. I'd love to see, I know she did Living with Fran, which I didn't see, but anyone that saw The Nanny reunion and Nosh to Remember, she was the producer for that. And she was also the producer for all of the versions of The Nanny that happened around the world. So she had a hand in making sure all of those nanny stories were, you know, both cohesive and were part of that brand that matters to her. I admire the hell out of Fran Drescher and everything she's been through. I kind of wish the Fran Drescher show, which I think was like a TV show that she had, which was like a daytime talk show. She had an entertainment talk show. I kind of wish the Fran Drescher talk show had gone on for more than one season myself.
Indeed. It could well be that she'll have a bit of a new era in what in her acting and such now. She seems to have been doing a few more films and shows in recent years. So who knows, maybe a new wind is coming for Drescher.
Yeah, and I like it. She's never really, even when she's not in front of the big screen, she's always behind the scenes pushing and advocating for better stories and for the dignity of the people that write and tell us good stories. Like, Fran Drescher's influence is probably one that we'll never quite know all the things that she has made happen, but she's brought us such joy, and it's continual joy. Like, for people that
Yes.
love The Nanny, like we talked about last time, for people that love Beautician and the Beast, or who are going to discover Beautician and the Beast because of this, hopefully some. There's a joy and a purpose in what Fran Drescher does, both as Fran Fine, as Joy Miller, as her character Unhappily Divorced. That is really gratifying to watch. The strength of Fran Drescher's purpose, especially in somewhere like Hollywood where tamping it down for the lowest common denominator seems to be the thing. It brings me
No, definitely.
joy to have Fran Drescher in the world at the same time as me, and to have movies like Beautician and the Beast, even with their 18% Rotten Tomato rating, which I think is ridiculous.
That's really stuck in your craw, hasn't it?
I'm angry and bitter about it. Yeah, it may not be like the best movie you've ever seen, but 18%, come on. There's a whole scene
Yeah.
where Fran Drescher makes a Lucille Ball potato head connecting with the servants in the castle. That's hard to pull off with any level of seriousness. It's also Fran Drescher came from the same place as Weird Al Yankovic, where she kind of got her start in UHF and these cult circles. And so there's kind of this cult of personality around Fran Drescher and how she works. And that can be hard to break out of. We talked about that earlier about the gift and the curse of Fran Fine. But Fran Drescher does come from humor, and there is a cult of personality in the humor work that she does, that can make it difficult for some people. But I just, Beautician and the Beast deserves better than an 18%. There's nothing I can do about it, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it's kind of an unfair, like, ding for a thing that doesn't need to be dinged. Yeah.
Maybe you can make it your life's work, dear sir, to see if you can get the percentage up a little bit.
I mean, I have other things to do, but I'll see what I can do. And again, Fran, call me. I want to work with you. I've got some ideas. I got a really gay Cinderella musical for you with a hunky prince, and a hunky Cinder fella. So call me, Fran. Do you have any last thoughts as we wrap up this summer short with an inseam of 5 inches or less, which is the new inseam length?
I'm not sure I can re I'm not sure what really to say, to be honest, because we covered quite a bit within this episode. So I'd like to give the last word actually over to you.
Okay. Everyone, please tune in for the rest of our summer shorts series. If you have anything that you'd like us to discuss for Halloween, we are taking ideas for Gay Christmas, as
Ooh.
always. And yeah, what part of Fran Drescher's discography is your favorite? It's not discography. What part of Fran Drescher's body of work is your favorite? Thank you everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Summer Shorts, a subsidiary of Everything Is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff.
Ta-da, bye.
Bye.